Start with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon and welcome, everybody. Welcome our faculty senators, alternate, our invited guest. Very happy to welcome everyone to today's Wednesday, November 16, 2022, Faculty Senate meeting. With that, this meeting is called into order, and I will go to agenda item 2 to verify quorum. And per Illinois Open Act provisions, Open Meeting Act provisions, as a public body, Faculty Senate must have a quorum of a simple majority for a meeting to convene. Pat, would you please verify if we have a quorum to proceed?
We do have a quorum, and I think you all know my drill by now. Please fill out the attendance sheet at your place and leave it there. We'll pick them up after the meeting. Please remember that even though you have a loud, clear voice and we can hear you in this room, if you want to make a comment or ask a question, please go to a microphone. It helps us get it on the recording, and it also helps people who might be listening virtually. And if you tell us your name and who you represent, that helps us. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Pat. This brings us to agenda item number 3, adoption of the agenda for today's November 16, 2022 Faculty Senate meeting. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda? Okay. Do we have a second?
I think Todd.
Any discussion regarding the agenda? Seeing no discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. The approval of the agenda for today's meeting has passed, and we shall move to agenda item 4 to approve minutes of the meeting from October 26th. 2022. I believe everyone should have their agenda packet, and I would allow about a minute for folks to review their minute. When silence is deep, my clock runs fast. May I have a motion and a second to approve the minute? Ohana, second? Okay, great, you got a second. Any discussion, addition, or deletion to the minute? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Abstention? Abstention? Right. Okay. The minutes are approved. Thank you, everyone. We move now to agenda item 5, which is public comment. Pat, do we have any timely request for public comment?
No public comment today.
Great. Thank you. So this brings us to agenda item 6, Faculty Senate President Announcement. I have only one remark to make concerning the National Council of Faculty Senate webinar on faculty engagement in shared governance. And I will keep it really brief so that we can get to our main agenda item today. As I reported at the last Faculty Senate meeting, I participated in the National Council of Faculty Senate October 28 webinar, and I have shared the result of the discussion with Faculty Senate Steering Committee and have engaged them with ways we could use some of the ideas and strategies and resources that were shared at the meeting to better shape and motivate our faculty engagement in shared governance here at NIU. And this is an issue that came to fore and shared with the more than 70 institutions or chairs of faculty senate that participated, stemming from, you know, effect and impact on the pandemic on faculty participation in shared governance. So be on the lookout for further ideas or actions around this topic. I want to draw your attention that we are joined today by NIU President Dr. Lisa Freeman, who is going to update this body about her presidential goals. Following President Freeman's presentation, we will hear from Jeff Salmon, Director, Center for Student Assistance, and Jean Baxter, Assistant Director, also from the Center for Student Assistance. Jeff and Jean are joined by a wonderful group of student leaders to update Faculty Senate on the activities of Husky Pantry, and more importantly, how Faculty Senate can support the food pantry, which is vital for campus well-being and sustainability. So with that, we will move on to agenda item 7, and at this point, I'm happy to invite Provost Ingram to offer any announcement or remarks she might want to make.
Oh, so thank
floor
you.
Is all yours.
Yeah, thank you, Ishmael. I don't have any new announcements, but I did want to make a couple of comments about some announcements that have gone out over the last few weeks. And first, I wanted to thank all of the members of Faculty Senate and all of my faculty colleagues here on campus for the support you've given me over the last 3.5 years. It's truly been a joy to be your provost. I look forward to continuing our collaboration until I step down on July 1st, so about another 8 months, working with Dean Elish Piper to make sure that we have a smooth and successful transition in this really important leadership position. And most of all, joining George and my other colleagues in the Department of Economics as a faculty member in 2024 and serving NIU in that faculty capacity. So thank you all.
Please join me in thanking you. Thank you, Provost Ingram. And with that, we will move on to agenda item 8, items for Faculty Senate presentation. And at this point, I am delighted to turn the floor to President Freeman.
Thank you, Ishmael, and good afternoon, everybody. Let's see if I can. One of these has to make it move, right? This is what I'm hitting. I need to aim it differently.
Is Tony
it's
here?
Right here. I can click. Just hate technology.
I do. Next slide, please, Pat. All right, so I'm really delighted to be here with you today to talk about the next academic year's university goals. And I'm going to briefly follow the outline that's on this slide, where I'm just going to remind people of this year's timeline, the core themes that form the framework for our university goals this and every year. And then I'm going to talk about specific goals for this coming academic year. I'm going to give very quick updates on a small subset of the goals related to empowerment and shared responsibility and student recruitment success and experience. And I want to spend most of our time together today on the overlapping goals related to transdisciplinary work. And I view this as an opportunity for engagement and to start to get feedback from you to modify and enhance the goals. And that's why we're leaving enough time for feedback and questions. I've tried to focus, obviously, on the goals that are most important to faculty because I'm talking here today to Faculty Senate. Next slide, please. So this is the outline, the timeline for the process we followed this year to both look at our progress on last year's goals formally, have a public information and action item on that progress at the November Board of Trustees meeting. I then work with the Board of Trustees to look at, okay, we've made this much progress on last year's goals. This is how I see them flowing into this year's goals. And once the trustees and I are in agreement as to what a draft looks like, I start to talk to the rest of the university about them. I'm here with you today with some draft goals, and I will be again with the University Council on November 30th. And November 30th is about the time the window starts to close for getting the draft into final form, because the goals will be considered formally by the Board of Trustees on December 8th. They need to be posted 48 hours in advance. The State of the University address is November 29th, and I certainly want to talk about the goals and the feedback and the buy-in and the what we've heard from the university community at that time. Next slide, please. So I don't think I have to remind you all that you are the Faculty Senate, but I just want to give you a reminder of the formal definition of your role in shared governance, and that is that this is the venue for academic policy development and implementation. You are the official voice of the NIU faculty in our shared governance structure, and you represent the liaison between the faculty, the NIU leadership, and the Board of Trustees. And that role is very important in the conversation that we're going to have today. I see we have some students with us too. The Student Association is the sole student governing body, and that represents student feedback and student views into the goals. And I can give you an example on a slide coming up of where that student voice through student government has made a difference very recently. Next slide, please. So these are the six themes that are in our strategic action planning framework and that frame the goals for the university each year: empowerment and shared responsibility, student recruitment success and experience, academic excellence and curriculum innovation, diversity, equity, and inclusion, research, scholarship, artistry, and engagement, and resource development and fiscal responsibility. And as I said, we're going to spend just a little bit of time on goals that are in under the first two themes, and then most of our time on overlapping goals between themes 3, 4, and 5. So can I have the next slide, please? So the graphic that you see on the left was actually designed by an NIU working group who were tasked with how do we build capacity for shared leadership on our campus? How do we do a better job of empowering teams and individuals? And they're going to be sharing this graphic as a framing vision and their suggestions with the university community at large starting in January. They made concrete examples for how professional development opportunities will be expanded. And there's certainly work in progress that uses shared leadership as a framework. The shared equity leadership exercise that Dr. Etchell Walden has spoken to you about is a shared leadership exercise. We have continued administrative efficiency projects looking at taking things from paper to not paper and eliminating steps along the way. And then we obviously are beginning again our multi-year budgeting and planning work, but this time it's really informed by the work that Dr. Etchell Walden, Dean Brinkman, and Dr. Blasey did to gather feedback from across the university community, bring that feedback to me, to Provost Ingram, and to our Chief Financial Officer, so that we have a blueprint going forward that will help us gain traction and meet the needs of the university community. And then we probably will have at least one new project starting under a shared leadership framework, and that is trying to get our Strategic Enrollment Management Plan 2.0 more embedded in the units across the university so that there's more ownership and more accountability. And I just want to point out to the faculty here that this was a staff leadership group that came up with that graphic, but Amanda Durek, the chair of psychology, was on that group and felt very strongly that there was no reason that framework also couldn't guide collaboration and action within departments and units that are comprised largely of faculty. Next slide, please. So under Goal A, increase enrollment and enhance student success, this goal is really about the objectives that are put forward in our Strategic Enrollment Management Plan 2.0. And emerging from the COVID pandemic, I don't think it will be a surprise to anybody in the faculty that we are trying very hard to emphasize things that help students be retained in school, persist to graduation, establish a sense of belonging, and that to do that at NIU, it's very important that we try to close equity gaps in retention rates, in graduation rates, and even in post-graduation outcomes. It's also very important as we think of the actions that we take to do this, that we be student-centric, and that we understand that, yes, students bear responsibility for their academic success, but we also share that responsibility for them. And I can just give the students a really good example because they're here and I want to talk to them about what it means to hear the student voice in being student-centered. So we've been looking very hard at how to simplify HR employment processes because we had just an overwhelming backup in student employment earlier, and people have been working very hard to streamline those processes. As we worked through that, we found that we had a rule on the books that was made with good intention that students who were on academic probation couldn't work on campus. And I think the original intent of that rule was to say students need to focus on their studies, so maybe they shouldn't be working. But the truth is that if you need to work to pay the bills, to put food on the table so you're not hungry while you're studying, you're going to have to work. And what that rule was doing was actually driving students to work off campus where the time to commute to their jobs was longer, the expenses associated with transportation were more of a hassle, and the rule wasn't really accomplishing that. We heard that from the Student Government Association, and we've eliminated that rule. It's taken steps out of the HR process, but more importantly, it brought a student-centered vision to our policies. And I think there are many other opportunities we have to look at the way we've always done things and say, when I look at this rule through the eyes of a student, is it accomplishing what we wanted it to? And so I look forward to having more student participation as we move forward. I want to dwell for a moment on the last bullet here. You know, prior to the pandemic, we were making incredible success as a university under our original Strategic Enrollment Management Plan, not only growing our incoming freshman class, but also dramatically improving our retention and graduation rates. We were climbing. And COVID came, and COVID really had a terrible impact on our progress in helping students stay in school. And I know to this audience who struggled to keep them engaged online, who worked so hard to help students succeed when students were just tuning out, I don't have to tell you this. Well, we are reaching out to try to re-enroll the students who left NIU during the pandemic. But we also have to acknowledge that 2 years of a drop in retention and re-enrollment rates is going to impact our total enrollment inevitably. Pat, if I can have the next slide. So I want everyone here to see that when we modeled what would be our total enrollment next year, even with recovery to a fairly substantial degree of our first to sophomore year retention rates, the best case scenario is going to put us in a range between 15,360 students and 15,570 students. That goal is a nice balance between hope and reality. These are achievable new student rates retention rates, re-enrollment rates for undergraduates and graduates reflected in this number. But the number that we're shooting for is actually lower than what we shot for last year. Last year, our range was 15,600 to 16,100. And again, we can't really turn back time, get rid of COVID, and make up for those smaller sophomore and junior classes at this point in time. So when people see the lower number, I don't want them to think that we're giving up, that we're not trying, that we're not ambitious. We are balancing hope and reality, doing everything we can to increase student success, to continue to build our freshman classes, and you know, continue to have a solid transfer rate. But we need to be honest with ourselves about what we can and cannot do coming out of COVID. Next slide. All right, so here's where the part starts that I really am excited about talking to you today. We have goals related to transdisciplinary work that are articulated in the university goals under three themes: academic excellence and curricular innovation, diversity, equity, and inclusion, research scholarship, artistry, and engagement. And there is intentional overlap in the goals under these themes because there is potential synergy. And the goals that I'm going to show you in a minute are responsive to recommendations from two faculty task forces that were convened by the provost and by Vice President Blasey. And they're in alignment with the feedback we've received from the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee, as well as the engagement task force. But you'll notice the graphic I have on the lower right of this slide shows a puzzle with a missing piece. And I want to be very honest with you before I show you the goals that there is something missing from the current goals, and it's something that I very much want to talk with you about and gain your feedback on this afternoon. So with that teaser, if I can have the next slide, please. So the goals are that I'm going to show you are very responsive to faculty recommendations. They all relate to transdisciplinary work. Some only appear under one of the themes, some appear under multiple themes. We were asked as leadership to standardize memoranda of understanding and explore options beyond MOU for managing joint appointments, to make joint appointments work better for the faculty in them, for the departments that have them, and for the university. And when we talk about exploring options beyond MOU, the task force were very specific about exploring whether faculty could be appointed in structures other than departments. They didn't put forward a lot of other suggestions, but they certainly suggested there might be things to look at other institutions where we could learn. We also need to make sure that as we enter multi-year budgeting, that our budget and plans align with what we want to accomplish academically. And that means that we have to have resources dedicated to support targeted hiring of faculty with specialized expertise, as well as faculty from underrepresented groups. Now, when we say we're going to align resources, I want to be very clear, some but not all of those resources will be new. Some of those resources will be reallocated. We also want to develop a model for cluster hiring so that we can incorporate cluster hiring into the planning and budgeting for implementation in fiscal year 24-26. So these goals are for fiscal year 23. So we're talking about developing a model so that we can implement the model a year from now. And we want that plan to be informed by strategies that have been successful at NIU, and we have some good examples. We have one in high energy physics. We have a couple others that are emerging as successful in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And then we have conversations going on with faculty in three transdisciplinary clusters: STEM education, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and social justice. And we're hearing loud and clear from those faculty what will and won't be important to the success of faculty clusters doing transdisciplinary work in these areas. Next slide, please. We've also heard from those faculty and others that there's not enough support on our campus for faculty who want to seek multidisciplinary grants, grants that require collaboration across colleges or even across institutions. Dr. Blasey has put together a plan to reorganize the resources under RIPS so that there is an enterprise level office that is available to support faculty research and scholarly development. And to facilitate these types of awards, there'll be very small amount of upfront investment. A lot of it will be reorganization, but over time, this office will pay for itself as those awards come in and bring in larger indirect costs. There were also some very tactical recommendations that were made by the Curricular Innovation Task Force, things related to how courses are numbered and who sits on curriculum committees. And I'm certainly going to encourage action to move those recommendations forward in the coming year. And then finally, we're going to create a competitive internal grants program to inspire and incentivize curricular innovation and experimentation. There'll be a to-be-named working group who will be making a model to be delivered no later than July 2023. And CITL, the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, will be organizing the resources this year to support that competition so that competition can be launched under them next academic year. All right, can I have the next slide and just hit once and then I'll tell you when to hit the next couple times. So those are all recommendations that came directly from the work and the white papers and the ideas put forward by faculty. But there's one really big thing that's missing in the recommendations right now. And that's what I think we really need to talk about together today. And I'm sure many of you have a little thought bubble trying to figure out what's missing. Maybe some of you know what's missing, but I'm not going to hold you in suspense. I'm going to ask Pat to click the next click so that you can see. What I currently don't have in the university goals, but what really needs to be there if all the goals that I just talked about are going to succeed and yield the results that we want, we have to talk about our academic reward systems. This is a topic that's gaining a lot of attention nationally. The picture here is of a new publication that came out from the American Council on Education this year, 2022, looking at the importance of equity-minded reform of faculty evaluation. And I think you can read the entire quote on the left yourselves. You don't need me to read it to you. But I really believe what it says in that bottom paragraph. And that is, just as no college or university can achieve its greatest aspirations without funding, leadership, and shared governance, academic reward systems can hold institutions back or propel them forward. And this is why I think we have to think about whether we have an academic reward system that will do justice to the rest of the university goals, which are things you said you wanted and we want the university to have as leaders. Can I have the next slide, please? And this topic of promotion and tenure and a broadened definition of scholarship is coming up everywhere now. The citation at the top is from the journal Science. It's from an article in 2021 with more than 13 authors and 6 institutions involved. And it was looking particularly at how promotion and tenure guidelines and rules and operations can impact innovation and entrepreneurship. But even with that lens, the group concluded that expanding what we value as scholarship can also help augment who we value as scholars. That's a pretty important statement. And it can support a more innovative and diverse professoriate, innovative and diverse in every dimension. And so it says clearly here, and I believe this too, that for transformation to occur, there has to be intentionality, there has to be leadership, and there has to be commitment. And I know that we have those at NIU, not just among our senior leaders, but among our faculty. And I say that because I've seen the work of the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee. Next slide, please. I took the bullets here right out of the report of the Faculty Senate Justice Committee in that closing section where the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee aligned their goals with the university goals from a previous year. And that alignment was all about hiring, tenure, and promotion systems, faculty evaluation and reward systems. And what you told this university as a faculty is that you want to remove barriers in hiring. you don't want to keep duplicating the same results over and over because we're not changing the systems that we have. That you want a more diverse faculty in terms of racial and ethnic diversity as well as disciplinary diversity, and that you want these new policies codified. And so then I think the question becomes one of how do we get there? And that's what I really want to talk about today, because I think while we have common goals, many, if not all of us, we don't have a common sense of the roadmap for getting there. And I want to kind of have that conversation today so I know what to put in the university goals and we can envision our future together. So next slide, please. So this slide diagrams the tenure and promotion process at NIU. It is by design a dual track process with faculty on one side and administration on the other side. And you'll notice that this is a slide that Bill Pitney made when he was the Vice Provost for Faculty Affairs at a time when University Council had the University Council Personnel Committee, but I was able to just correct it, given the wonders of PowerPoint, to reflect our new structure where very rightfully the Faculty Senate control the academic process. But when you look at this process, you can see that everything starts at the department level. And whether it's on the faculty side or the administrative side, it flows up ultimately to the president, who makes a recommendation that is affirmed by the Board of Trustees. There are broad university guidelines for faculty evaluation, tenure, and promotion that reside in the Faculty Senate bylaws. And then those are operationalized at the department level by the departmental committees. When you think about how this process is designed and how this process works, content evaluation very rightfully resides at the level of the scholars who are most familiar with the discipline. And at the administrative level, there's more process validation, quality assurance, and resolution of any differences. So given this structure, with a very decentralized piece over here, how do we move the conversation forward to action about changing faculty reward systems to be more inclusive of scholarship? Next slide, please. Well, what the provost and I can do is use the power of the bully pulpit, use our ability to create incentives, to convene meetings, to promote dialogue, to share data, and to share knowledge, knowledge about what happens on our campus and knowledge about what happens on the national scene. Meaningful change in the university guidelines or in departmental guidelines, college guidelines, has to happen over here, Pat, if you could. And I know that there's good work going on. I know there's work being done by people in this room, by the Faculty Senate Committee, or at least their recommendations are driving work, and really good work is going on in some of the colleges and departments. But, you know, because we're kind of decentralized, I don't know the details of that work. I don't know the progress of that work. And as a result, I don't really know how I can elevate that work in my communication and messaging to help drive it forward. So one of the things I'm going to ask you in a few minutes is to let me know more of that work. But I also want to point out that I don't know about all of that work, but there are also faculty on our campus in units that are not looking hard at their guidelines, not thinking about how to be more inclusive of different types of scholarship, who are afraid that that work isn't going on, who don't have a place to see themselves in that work, and who want to. So I think we have to make sure that as we communicate, we're communicating across the faculty as well as between faculty and administration. And then if you could just flip one more slide. Before I ask you to help me answer the questions that are on the slide, I just want to make a statement about how important I think this is to NIU. And I wrote this down because I wanted to make sure that I didn't leave anything out, even though I really don't like using notes when I'm talking about this. But, you know, we are at a time when the value of higher ed is being questioned. And we have a real opportunity to show the impact of our work in new ways. We have the opportunity to recognize and to recruit publicly engaged scholars. We have the opportunity to do the same with scholars who seek to blur disciplinary boundaries in their teaching and in their learning and their scholarship and their artistry. And they have the desire to do that even when they're early career faculty. We have the opportunity to recognize and recruit scholars who support mission-driven work around diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice. And we have the same opportunity to recruit and recognize innovators and entrepreneurs who are creating new technologies to address the crises facing our world. Faculty who want to see and witness the impact in their lifetime, so maybe they're seeking patents rather than papers in some cases. We have an opportunity to align our systems with the diverse and evolving forms of scholarship and to meet the needs of the students and faculty and their desire to have more meaning in their work and to see their work impact the world outside of academia. And as I'm saying this, I know that there are people who are going to say, this is just an excuse to decrease rigor. This is not the way an elite university or an excellent university operates. And I'm going to tell you, I just don't think that's right, but you don't have to take my word for it. Because right now, the Association for Public and Land-Grant Universities and AAU universities within that organization, the American Council on Education, and the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine have all convened conversations on this topic, published white papers, and promoted change. I believe that for NIU to remain excellent and to remain excellent at delivering our mission and serving our students and serving our region and society, we have to change. We have to change the reward systems to be more inclusive and to recognize the evolving forms of scholarship. And so what I want us to do now is for me to stop talking and to talk to you, to hear about the work that you're doing. I know that we have a Faculty Senate subcommittee that's been very engaged in this. And then I'd really like to hear your ideas about what I need to put in the university goals and what that means for the steps we take together over the next year. So I'll stop there. And Ishmael, I know you have let people know that I might be calling on them, so they're not completely shocked. So please take it away.
So please join me in thanking President Freeman for this wonderful presentation. I've been saying all along in the last two Faculty Senate meetings the importance of faculty engagement in shared governance. And this is one such opportunity where that shared governance has come to us, to this body, reaffirming the good work that this body has done. So I think the onus is now upon us to kind of engage and provide feedback to this presentation and outline of goals that speak to the work that we ourselves are engaged in. So I'm not going to take much time, and I have called on some of my colleagues and we discussed prior on how we can take also this opportunity to kind of speak and provide brief update one way or the other about the work that Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee is doing, in particular with respect to the tenure and promotion review process from the purview of Faculty Senate. So without further ado, I have my two good colleagues. And again, the question is also directed, we say broadly to All faculty?
Absolutely all faculty, and the conversation starts here today, but if we need some iterations between now and the end of November to get this right in the goals, I'm open to that. I'm open to meeting with faculty at your convenience.
Perfect. Okay, we have Dr. David Valentina, who is the current chair of the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee and former chair also of one of the Faculty Senate Working Group Institutional Racism.
Oh, that sounds good.
Hello? Okay, there we go. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us and for all the work that you do. One of the things that really stood out in what you said is that we have to change, right? And I think that's a very complicated statement. And we're talking about, in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, that we want to change ourselves because we want to change the society, the culture that we live in. We want it to be more just. And the process of change, I think I've spoken to you before about how that process of change is something that is not centralized. It's not going to happen on a committee. It's not going to happen in one administrator's office or even just a few. It's something that has to happen distributed throughout the entire university in every department, in every unit, arguably in every faculty member's office and courses and so on. And so that's a real challenge of how do we change culture? Culture is our shared beliefs, values, practices. How do we get that to happen? So the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee, as you know, may remember, we adopted five of those prioritized recommendations, and a couple of them had to do with hiring, tenure, and promotion. And I think that one of my colleagues is here who's been working in spearheading that and knows more about what we've been doing specifically related to hiring, tenure, and promotion. Briefly, we've been gathering information about hiring, tenure, and promotion at NIU, at other institutions, the evidence-based approaches talked about in the literature, best practices. We've been engaging individuals and departments in hiring and tenure and promotion, and there's also been efforts by others, such as the union has been doing workshops on hiring, tenure, and promotion. And I went through one of those. There may be several of you here who have gone through some of those. So there's a lot of dialogue taking place, I know, in my department in psychology and in many other departments across the university. So some of that work has already started. The Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee is also talking, trying to work with ADEI to develop a plan to prompt and support the departments as they do this work. And we see that we're very excited about the developments there. But one of the things about we have to change is that means that we have to push against all those institutional forces. And there are great institutional forces. If you don't know, institutions are very good at not changing. They're very good at it, right? Every time I try to get Metronet to show up to hook up, you know, to fix my Metronet, I know how incredibly good they are at not changing. And there's lots of forces that keep us doing what we've been doing. And that means that we've got to be pretty creative. We have to start seeing what we haven't seen before, and we also have to start getting out of our comfort zone. And so I think that engaging with each other socially and in terms of getting into trainings and in terms of getting into out of our comfort zone and learning about some of these social justice issues and how they play out here in our institution is a really important part of that. So that's one of the things that comes to mind to me. I'd like to just check in. I don't know. I just wanted to check in with Shodan. I don't know if you did. You have anything that you wanted to tell us about some of the work, the work group that you've been working on around some of the hiring, tenure, and promotion.
Sure. Yeah, Xiaodan Hu. I'm in, from the Department of Counseling and Higher Education. I've been working on the Social Justice Committee for 2.5 years. So in the past 2.5 years, I'm just going to briefly on behalf of everybody on the committee. We've been doing a lot of work trying to promote DEI. And oh, that's zooming in. All right. And particularly for our working group on the equitable tenure and promotion policies. We've done a lot of literature reviewing other universities' policies and procedures. The information, the message is consistent that a diverse and equitable group of faculty, tenure and tenure track faculty, is going to ultimately benefit our students. Student learning, student success, that's who we're serving. And we've talked to individual faculty members, we've talked to six of the College Council. Again, the work is still ongoing, and the message is consistent that an equitable TMP, tenure and promotion policy, is desired and valued at our colleges. But at the same time, they are wondering what are some university support they will get to substantialize some of these concepts and ideas, right, into practice at the local level. That's the message we've been getting. We're seeing a lot of individual work in departments in colleges. They're asking, so what other colleges are doing? We want to learn from others as well. So it's really exciting to see. It's really empowering to be that missing piece, to be the solution to our larger NIU university goals. We really look forward to future collaboration across divisions, as well as institutional support to make this work into reality in the future. Thank you.
Xiaodan and David, if I were to take what I heard from you and try to draft in addition to the goals and send that out to you in the context of the goals, could we do some iterative wordsmithing and you be responsible for feedback from others? So I think the provost and I are very cognizant of what the faculty owns and how we can convene and incentivize and elevate, but we don't want to cross a line where it looks like we're doing what faculty are responsible for. On the other hand, Xiaodan, I very much appreciate you saying that if we don't green light and we don't elevate and we don't cheerlead, then everyone feels like they're working in the wilderness, and we don't want that either. So I'll try to capture that, but please, David.
Reminded of another aspect of this is that the work of changing our culture in some ways involves a kind of a reconceptualization of who we are and what we're doing. And that makes me, you know, think of these fancy words, epistemological change, right? That there needs to be some flexibility there. And I think that actually does happen within our individual disciplines. Like my discipline, we have a professional organization, the American Psychological Association. And if I go and I look in there, there's some really cutting edge, great ideas that would really help my department move and be part of a culture change here at NIU. And I suspect the same is true in library science, in biology, in other areas, that if you go into your professional organizations, that people in your professions have been really thinking deeply in many, many professions, probably most or all of our professional organizations, and that information, the individual departments and the individual faculty members in each discipline has unique access to, and that's going to be really helpful for bringing about culture change. So that's one of the things that I think that we need to access and bring to bear. So and yes, I would love to be part of a conversation. One of the things that I was going to do today when we got to the Social Justice Committee report was to make a request of faculty to consult with your colleagues and to bring forward some concerns. And so I think that this can be embedded in that same request. And I would love to do what I could to try to facilitate some dialogue between the administration and the faculty.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just want to add something to the specific point regarding rewarding faculty tenure and the various work around that. So the Academic Affairs Working Group of the Faculty Social Justice Committee had done significant work on that front. And I wanted also kind of acknowledge here the support of Provost Ingram and Vice Provost Chad McAvoy in guiding us and also putting us in touch with a number of resources. So what we have done is, Sheldon mentioned, you know, the literature review that we collected, but we also intentionally look at different models. And one of our colleagues, Ben Creed, who had served on this committee, so he led that work up to a point, and then during the summer, that work was deepened. So we are currently in the process of, you know, reviewing the data that had been collected. So if and when we hear back from you, so with respect to this specific point in terms of reward, you know, the structures of various ideas around rewarding tenure, maybe that's something we can revisit the models we look at and what the literature also reveal. And hopefully, since you kind of, you know, really spoke directly to this point, I think it is one of the points that we should engage really further.
And I think that what we all want is a bullet that has meaning, that captures the desire to work together, to advance the conversation and take action on pushing the work forward. You know, if you have done a lot of research, if you have models, if, you know, I know that you're in dialogue with the provost and vice provost because I speak to them quite often. But again, I want to make sure that in the university goals, the leadership are not seen as overstepping, but at the same time, we set a concrete North Star. That sounds like a really terrible analogy, but I think you know what I'm saying, that we have something that we're reaching for that's achievable, that's more than just collaboration, that's more than just exploration, that's maybe another step towards comparison, towards highlighting change in process on our own campus. And I would love to continue to have the dialogue with anyone here who wants to be involved between now and the end of November. And Ishmael, as you know, the official representative of the faculty, you and I talk a lot. I really, really am excited to hear what you just said and want to embed that in the goals in a meaningful way.
So I didn't prepare anything, so I might stammer a little, but when I hear your talk and the slides you presented and I'm jotting down notes, what I see is opportunity. You know, I mean, there are so many great collaborations between departments that we haven't fully explored or taken advantage of. I'm in the School of Art and Design. I'm Todd Buck. I teach illustration, and we have art and design students now that are collaborating with engineering students on their projects, which is a really great experience for our students and theirs. I teach illustration, and some of my scientific illustration students are creating imagery for professors in the biological sciences department. There's just so many ways we can cross over. One of the challenges I've seen, though, is let's say I've got a great idea and I want to, you know, institute an industrial design certificate or even maybe start a program, but I'm also a full-time, you know, teaching 5 classes, independent studies, and my own research. So whatever I do towards that industrial design degree or certificate is in addition to. And I'm finding it really challenging to find the time to dedicate to that outside of my normal duties. So I think that's where the incentive is. If I don't do it, it doesn't get done. But if I take it on, wow, that's a lot of pressure, because that's it, you know what I mean? That's where I find the rub, is I want to do these things, but do I have the time and energy to take on more?
And I think that what I gathered from the task force reports was very much what I just heard from you. And that time resource issue can be addressed in part from some of the recommendations we're putting forward, having an incentives program to buy out time so faculty have resources to devote to new courses, having a sandbox where faculty can test new course ideas without having to go through a very arcane curricular approval process to get to try something that's exciting but may not work. But even with those types of changes, the opportunity to alleviate your time problem, if the work you're doing, which is work our students want done, so that they can have these experiences, because they don't come in thinking in disciplinary silos, and I'm not sure we want them to leave thinking in disciplinary silos. If that work isn't valued or recognized by your department, if you're a full professor, that's okay. If you're not, it's not okay. And if you're a faculty member from a marginalized community who's doing restorative work or doing work with an equity lens, and your work is devalued because it's seen as not as good as incremental disciplinary work the way we've always done it, then the price is much, much higher. So in some ways, although I'm sure it doesn't seem this way to you, as you want to do an industrial design certificate and there are only 24 hours in a day, your challenges that you just articulated are the easier ones to solve than the academic evaluation system that hurts people and drives them away. And you know, the institutions that are a little further ahead of us, like the University of Arizona, did a fairly significant overhaul of their tenure and promotion policies. They started out really motivated more to look at innovation and entrepreneurship, and they wound up having a much larger equity component than they thought they would. But they say the benefit is better faculty morale and better faculty retention, because people are being more creative and their students are more excited. And I really, really appreciate your comments, because they put a very personal narrative on drier language in the task force report. So thank you for sharing. Even though you weren't prepared, you did a great job.
This is Lisa Liberty, College of Education. I'm not prepared either. But one of the things that I was thinking of when I was hearing you speak was related to travel to conferences and the equity gap with support as a professor to be able to go to conferences, like David was mentioning, with, you know, being able to engage and collaborate with other colleagues, and being able to even go and present your research with other faculty, you know, at other universities. You can't go to a conference with the amount of money that is offered. You know, it's, the price has gone up. And so to be able to engage in that scholarship, which I think I'm hearing, you know, from the university standpoint, we want to push the buttons and, you know, move forward. And so thinking about the cost that it takes to, you know, get a plane ticket, stay for 2 or 3 days, you know, that can be a lot for, you know, somebody who, you know, doesn't have the financial support.
Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Microphones always are a little too tall for me. I'm Virginia Naples from Biological Sciences, and I have heard a lot today about the term creativity, and that is inherent to everything that we do. And one of the things that I would like to offer as a contribution to a cultural change, which I hope is an improvement, is that everyone rightfully credits people in visual and performing arts and creative writing and other programs as being creative. However, to do scientific research, especially as I do in biological sciences, I have to think outside the box. I have to create new methods. I would posit that I am as creative in my own way as people are in the more traditionally recognized creative fields. And I would love to see a cultural change that accepts creativity as being valued in all disciplines, because it's not simply that I'm dealing with equations or things that are cut and dried. I've got to figure out which things to use, how to use them, and put them together in new ways, because everything I have to do is just as original as everybody else. And I think we can go a long way toward making everybody feel their contribution is more valued if the creativity is recognized at all levels.
Thank you.
I'll be fast. Brian May, Department of English. The English department is, you might imagine, would be a department that would be able to attract minority faculty. You would think so compared to conceivably chemistry, right? I won't go into why it is that I think that might be the case. Many of us might assume that. The English department has exceeding difficulty attracting minority faculty. And in fact, the English department now, so I think about 25, 26 members. I think we have one person who identifies as a non, or as an Hispanic white, okay? And everybody else is, I believe, would identify as white, Caucasian. I guess I'm wondering, short of some pretty radical institutional change, what we could do to attract more minority faculty. English departments around the country compete heavily when there are black faculty available, black PhDs. And I guess what I'm wondering is, are we taking the need for, or will we be taking the need for institutional transformation seriously enough that we'd be willing to hire into professorial positions, non-PhDs, for example, maybe MAs? I think there are a lot more MAs who would be available than PhDs, for example. And I think that's a kind of step that we could take that might make a difference. Are we willing to do it? Are we willing to take a step in that direction?
You're asking me that, but the academic personnel policies actually reside largely with the Faculty Senate bylaws. And the administration and the Board of Trustees take the recommendations of faculty in these matters very, very seriously. I will say that I think we are working on this campus through looking at models for cluster hiring. I think we have a DEI postdoc program that currently has one person in it who's across law and gender studies that are possibilities. But I think we all recognize that these things are very important, that the traditional pathways to the professoriate may need to be expanded. But again, when you say, are we willing to take that risk, it's actually not me. It's actually not the provost. It's actually the faculty. Who are you willing to recognize as colleagues? And how important is balancing doctoral preparation with the need for more diversity? And how do you bring those two together? So I'm actually very excited that you're raising this question, because I think we have to put more ideas like that out there. And when they're out there, instead of saying, no, we could never do that, we should say, that's an interesting idea. These are the things that I see as maybe not being beneficial in that idea. These are the things that I think that idea could solve. These are perhaps some unintended consequences. If we wanted to build a program around that idea, how would we analyze those things and suggest a program that we could pilot or try? But I think whenever we think about doing something like that, and I am energized by the fact that we're willing to have a conversation like that, we have to always make sure that the person or the faculty member we hire into a pilot program are not disadvantaged or damaged by that process.
Yeah, there's been the idea at least floated that an MA student could, we could get a program that would in fact turn MAs into PhDs. In our own department, we hire them as MAs.
I think there are lots of models that work like that, and I think it would be a great thing to entertain. But again, it's not up to me, so.
Well.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, join me in thanking Professor. Okay, so we will like to invite now Jeff, Jean, and student leaders to present the update.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's always tough to follow the president. But thank you for allowing us this opportunity to speak with you here today. My name is Jeff Salmon, and I am the director for the Center for Student Assistance. So we have been an office that's been around since 2020, and you probably may have heard of us about COVID compliance and the Student Emergency Fund and things of that nature. But in the last 2 years, we've really grown our office in a number of ways that benefit our students and really help them progress towards their goals, towards graduation. At the heart of our work, I always reflect back on the theory of the margin. It's a higher ed theory about student development and how we can help take care of, try to alleviate a lot of barriers for students as much as we can. And by doing that, that empowers them to be successful in the classroom. To take care of why they're here and why they want to be here. So that's at the heart of our mission. We try to provide holistic support that is focused in on what the students need in the moment they come to see us. And that could change from each time they come to see us. We believe in being able to provide full circle support. So just because a student comes and says they have a question about financial aid and scholarship, that doesn't mean that they don't have another need like housing insecurity. If they come to talk to us about library operations, like the hours of the library operations, that doesn't mean that they couldn't use our peer academic coaches to help them with their classroom experience. So again, we really focus in on what students' needs are when they come to see us. And we do a lot of advocacy support in that process. So I don't like to say that a lot that, you know, we're here to help our students in crisis because I don't want to be deficit minded. And I want to say that we're here to support our students that are experiencing something that is impeding their success as a Husky here at NIU. And we take that responsibility very seriously and try to help our students get the resources, support, whether here in the community or on campus, to help them be successful. So one of those very important ways that we do that is, you know, taking on food insecurity, which is a national problem across the country and at many colleges. So today I'm happy that you invited us here to talk. I hope I'm able to talk again about some of the more ways we support the students through the Center for Student Assistance, but I'm happy that you gave us time today to really focus in on the Husky Food Pantry and food insecurity. And I have the pleasure of turning over to my colleague who has done great work over the last 2 years supporting our students at the Husky Food Pantry. So please welcome Ms. Jeannie Baxter.
I'd like to first thank Dr. Montiana for your invitation here to speak today to the Faculty Senate and for your personal interest in supporting the Husky Food Pantry and the students that we serve. And also want to thank all of you for your commitment to our students at NIU. I think that your commitment so much often goes above and beyond the walls of your classroom and your labs, your departments, your offices. So we appreciate this time today. And I will, you can go ahead. Thanks. Yep. Thanks. I'm just going to touch briefly on this, and then I want to turn the microphone over to the students because they can share their personal perspective. And they also have a chance to offer some suggestions on how you can support the pantry. I always feel like open and honest dialogue and taking multiple perspectives adds creativity and depth to our solutions. So I'm anxious to hear what they have to say. And I'm very happy that and thankful that you're all here. So thanks. Genuine care is the root of the Husky Food Pantry, and it's a legacy that we strive to carry on. We could say that the Husky Food Pantry was born out of an office drawer in career services. I don't know if anyone knows the history on the pantry. Kathy Zeidema is a retired career service employee, and she learned about students' needs that went much deeper than career counseling. And she listened. She addressed the needs that they had for their basic need for food. So she stocked drawers, and she others started following her. And then soon after, she started looking for a place to put a pantry, and she found that at Grace Campus Ministry. So in 2014. The pantry opened, the Husky Food Pantry opened. And it was genuine care that fueled her drive and determination to go above and beyond to help students. And it was genuine care that drove others to help move the pantry onto campus. So Dennis Barsima was involved on faculty, staff, and students. They worked together, and in 2016, the campus moved to the pantry moved to the Chick Evans Field House. So cut a few things short so we can get to the students, but if you want to go to pantry operations, some pictures there. I always smile at the one on the left because that's our Prep the Pantry volunteers. And what they do is they take food. I pick up food from Meijer that's normally expired and frozen or damaged. So every week they're sorting through dozens of eggs. And we clean out the broken ones and save the ones that that aren't broken. So it's always that we get a good laugh out of that. I would say leadership, as far as leadership, our volunteers here, that genuine care goes back to being emphasized the most in their training. They're also trained in food safety and volunteer management, trauma-informed customer service, communications, and all of that training comes from faculty that offer their time to come in and help me provide that support. As far as our operations, we're open. I don't know, has anybody been to the pantry? You guys? Yeah. Couple? We're over in the Chick Evans Field House, we've started a couple of different things. We piloted two programs. Last year, we opened another pantry day. So we're now open 2 days a week, Wednesday 11:30 to 1 and Thursday 5 to 7. And then we also piloted being open to all students, both on campus and then off-campus students. And we now have 11% of our on-campus, or 11% of our students are on campus. And what they're telling us is that, I can give you an example of one. In the survey, she said that she has to take medicine every day. But she wasn't able to afford a larger meal plan that gave her three meals a day. So the medicine she takes has to be taken with food. So she either had to take it without food and get sick, or take it with food and supper. So that's kind of an example of our the food insecurity. We define food insecurity as just struggling to have consistent access to nutritious food. So that's what we look at. And that's the students that we serve. Let me share a little bit on challenges here that we're facing. We get our food from the Northern Illinois Food Bank. They are they're a part of Feeding America. We are an agency partner, one of 900 that they serve. So that's where the bulk of our food comes. And then also the Direct Connect program, again, from stores like Meijer. We pick up from Meijer and then sometimes from Walmart, and it's expired foods. So that's the bulk of where our food comes from. But our challenge is that we are now serving this from August to through October. We had 1,128 student visits. That's 384 more than last year during that time. So we're serving more students, having more student visits. At the same time, we have access to 3,000 pounds less of food. So the food bank is at about 60% of what they normally have for food. So between that challenge and the challenge that the cost of food has given us, we're definitely unable to get as much food in. The other challenge is that I'm using five times as much money from our donor account that I did last year. So right now I'm using about $3,000 to $3,500 a month from our donors, excuse me, from our donor account. So that means that to get through this year, I've got to come up with about $17,500 at a minimum to keep us open. So I think I'm going to skip over our mission and vision just so I can get to where the students can talk. But on the last slide, oh, those are some great pictures. Darn, maybe I wish I had more time to go back. We had a lot of pictures of, let's just take a quick peek. I'm sorry. I just wanted to emphasize the fact that we are so dependent on NIU community and the DeKalb and Sycamore community. And there's some pictures from like community gardens and the vegetables they supply us. And there's Dr. Kuipers doing a team building workshop for our leadership team. And Madeline Anderson is a faculty member. She comes in and volunteers and brings students from her class. I would say at least two or three times a semester. And this student over here is graduating. He's from Washington. He said he lives with about 12 other students. They had no dishes. And Dan from dining had donated some dishes. They went really fast. So this here over in the corner there, that's Julie Yurko. She's also an alumna of NIU. She is the CEO of the Northern Illinois Food Bank, and they donated a refrigerator and freezer, which was awesome because they were breaking down big time. Emmanuel Lutheran Church, that's an NIU student there in the bottom corner. This middle one is from the Stagecoach Theater Players. They donate this twice. That was a pickup truck full of school supplies that they donated, which I've got lab notebooks. I've got to get over to the chemistry department. Let's see. Oh, Kathy Zeidema up in the far right, up top right. I connected with her and she wanted to help. I said, oh, they want bread. She went out looking for bread and came back with $5,000 in gift cards from Meijer. So we are able to get nutritious food when we can't get it from the food bank. And this one down in the corner here, that was from the president's office. Liz Wright organized that, and leaders donated. That was one of our largest donations the students, you could tell it just kind of lifted them during that past week when we had those on the shelves. So it's that's what sustains us is you all. So appreciate that. Okay, then we can go to, these are just a few ideas. If you would be interested in supporting us, we would love to be able to have the Center for Student Assistant listed on the syllabus or on your syllabus or on your Blackboard, so they know that we are a resource. We want to increase awareness. Right now we're serving about 3% of our population, and a lot of the research says there's about 35% of students out there that are food insecure. So as scary as it is with the challenges that we face, we still feel like we need to get that information out that there are resources here on campus for them. As far as the money, I dream of being able to have traditions in each college where there's some type of fundraising event where it supports the pantry. Or if you could, if you have service components, if you could mention the pantry or encourage your student organizations to do a food drive or come and do a wraparound table event, maybe one on budgeting, helping students maybe choose nutritious food or save your money instead of buying beer, those kinds of things. And the last thing is really collaborating. We'd love to collaborate in any way that supports your research or your programs and also the pantry. So thanks for your time. And now I'm going to turn it over to, I'll start with Patty McKermit. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Patty McKermit. I'm a recent graduate of NIU. I was a student athlete from 2018 to 2022. I played baseball here, and I started going to the food pantry. I'm a first-generation college student, and I come from a single-income household. So I started kind of going there to, I was just seeing it, what it was about. I wanted to have access to it because it really provided that extra boost of getting that nutritious food, especially being a student athlete. That's been really critical for me as an athlete here. So I started going there to utilize the pantry. And then I figured since I was going there and using it, I said I can also give back. So I started volunteering there and seeing what actually went on behind the scenes. And then Jeannie invited me to become a part of the leadership team. So I kind of transitioned from a person using the pantry to a leadership role of pouring into other students and being able to help show what the pantry is about and help people in my situation who are here to represent the university on an athletic level, but was also able to pour into other student athletes. I'm seeing wrestlers, I'm seeing soccer players, like also utilizing the pantry and seeing that for student athletes as well, that it's something that's really important to have that access to that nutritious food. And so we've been able to kind of collaborate with student athletics. Dr. Kuipers, who is up there, she's very involved in Athletes in Action, which the pantry has started to pair with, and kind of just getting athletics involved and supporting the pantry's mission. And so it's something that I've seen from firsthand account of being a user of the pantry and then transitioning into helping other students get involved at volunteering there. So it's just something that's really made an impact on me here as a student athlete, and I'm seeing how much of an impact it can make for students across campus. So I just appreciate all the help that has gone into making the pantry possible, and it's had a huge impact for me, and I hope it continues to grow for everybody here. So thank you guys, and turn it over to whoever's next.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Abiodun Ademiluwa, and if you cannot tell by my accent already, I'm Nigerian. So I came to NIU last year, and it was my very first time in America. And so I was trying to adapt to the culture, adapt to the environment, and adapt to the bitter winter. But one of the things that really connected me to NIU was the Oski Food Pantry. heard about the pantry from my friends, I decided to check out the pantry. I didn't really know what surprised me the most, the free food or the welcoming environment. So I got there, I felt connected with the people there. I got free food. It was just like going to Walmart supermarket, and then it's more friendlier than Walmart. So I was able to get nutritious food. And talking to some of my friends yesterday, I realized how important the Oscar Food Pantry is to the international students. Like, it's a way for us to feel connected to NIU. Most of us don't have any connection to people at the top, but through the Oscar Food Pantry, we are able to like meet other people, meet other students. And it's like, I think the food pantry represents the school as a whole to us. And so we feel connected by receiving food and by having this sense of belonging to the NIU community. So I would like to like appreciate everyone for listening to us, and we really appreciate your support so that the Oscar Food Pantry can continue. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everybody. My name is Grant Gorrell. I'm a senior here at NIU, and having served as a student leader at the pantry for nearly 4 years, I can personally say that I've seen the amazing impact of our pantry on the Huskies in our community. But it also means that I've seen over the years what institutional support our pantry has lacked and where we need to go from here. One of those instances I'll say is during the uptick of COVID, a couple of us students, we really tried to keep the pantry open, and we had to battle the fear of getting COVID versus the knowledge that our colleagues, the people we see in class, would not be able to get food. So just to show the sort of starkness of this problem on campus, I just want that to illustrate that. But it's for these reasons that I've stayed on as a student leader for so long, because I've never felt that our work at the pantry was over. Jeannie and us student leaders have worked hard to make the pantry a better place, a place of comfort and service for our students, but we all know that NIU can do better. I believe the university, the institution itself, should play a more significant role in the pantry, from ensuring all students know the pantry is available to them, whether that's in the syllabus, from faculty making themselves aware of the problems that their students face in order to be successful in the classroom, to helping make sure that the pantry is stocked, that we are having the resources available to students, and most of all, having faculty possibly participate in the pantry, if you can, to volunteer, to bring students to the pantry like Ms. Anderson. In fact, it's how I got my start at the pantry. I went with her group in my Comms 100 class, and I've stayed on ever since. But your students need to know that your support is there, that you support them and see the problems they face, that you're willing to help them solve them and bear responsibility for getting them to the next stage in life. And we need to see greater institutional support, because this is for students, students like me, students like Patty, and all of us students. And it's because we're students at the lifeblood of this university community. And I cannot stress community any more than just that. We are a community, and we're more than just going to class. We have real faces, we are real students, we have real problems. So as much as you can help, I please encourage you to do that.
Thank you, Grant. That was very well said. My name is Emily Cordy, and I'm a first year graduate student in nutrition and dietetics. So we've discussed today a little bit about nutrition, but I want to highlight on that a little more in the importance of food security. So we cannot discuss food insecurity without discussing nutrition. We have to recognize we need both quantity and quality when stocking the Husky Food Pantry shelves. We need safe, nutritious, and culturally appropriate food items to provide our students. When we take a step back and we look at food insecurity at the national level, there are various trends that we have seen throughout literature. I think it's important that we reflect on these trends and recognize how they affect NIU students. First, food insecure individuals see higher rates of obesity, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and other chronic conditions. There are two processes hypothesized that cause this. First, it's that they have a higher consumption rate of low nutrient foods. These items are high calorie, they're higher in added sugar, sodium. These foods are prevalent on the pantry shelves. They're often cheap, affordable, and even when we go to the grocery store, we see these items are EBT approved. So if you have SNAP, you're able to purchase them. And then additionally, it's noted that stress plays a factor in these increased risks. The stress of Where's my next meal coming from? The stress of how I'm going to pay the bills, the stress of just daily life causes this increased risk. By failing to stock our pantry with nutritious items, we are failing our students. We are contributing to a rise in health disparities. We are creating poor health outcomes now and in the future for our students. The time to change is now. Campus food insecurity needs to be addressed and recognized that is a prevalent issue at NIU. Food is a fundamental right. We need funding and overall support to stock our shelves, not only just to stock them with food, but stock them with nutritious items that set students up for success now and in the future. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to Jeannie or Jeff.
Can we please give one more round of applause to our students and thank them for sharing their stories? Thank you. Well, thank you again for sharing this space and this time with us. We really appreciate it. What I'd like to be able to also share is that you can sign up to volunteer up on our website, niu.edu, the Center for Student Assistance. There are slots Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday listed for volunteer hours. The pantry gets stocked on Tuesdays from 9 to about 11:30. They'll do stocking again from 9 to that same time on Wednesdays, and then host the pantry from 11:30 to 1, and then from 5 to 7 on Thursday. So the volunteers start at 4:30. So you can go in, sign up, encourage your students to sign up for those slots. We also have online this week through the end of the semester and all 16 weeks next semester for you or anyone or student organizations to sign up for various different drives. We've selected some special drives, like 1 week is an all kind of toiletry drive, different things that our students need at the pantry. So again, that's online. You can sign up on it. We really encourage students to use this. It's a new feature that we added this semester because we saw trends of students trying to do their food drives at the very end of the semester, which kind of means right around when we close. So it kind of defeats the purpose to get all the food right when students leave, and then there's 6 weeks before it reopens again. So we really are pushing our students and our student organizations and our staff and partners and colleagues to go online starting today or the first week of next semester and choose an option to help support us. The Husky Food Pantry will be part of the Husky United campaign next semester. So if you would like to donate to that, you could also go today or any day to the foundation's website and make direct donations to the Husky Food Pantry as well. So again, thank you for your time and thank you for allowing us to come speak to Faculty Senate.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jean, and thank you all, our student leaders, for your time and everything that you've done in sharing about Husky Pantry and how we can support it. So this is very valuable information, and we are all encouraged to lend the much needed support to your great work. So thank you again. Sure, absolutely.
I think his name is Dan Kanan. Is that how you pronounce his last name? Dan Kanan and Chef Brian Flower have put together a fundraiser. It's tomorrow evening, and all the donations are going to the pantry. Chef Brian is going to be making up a 3 or 4 course meal. So if you have some time and are interested, feel free. Thank you. Thanks again for your time.
Agenda item 9, report from councils, board, and standing committees. And so without further ado, I am going to invite Linda Sabarillo, Faculty Advisory Council, to the IBHE representative.
Thank you. Both presentations today were super important and deserve the full attention of Faculty Senate. Sorry for my voice. I'm really sick. So if it's going like this, it's due to this cold that I'm trying to get over. But I do realize that it's late in the afternoon, so I would like to propose, if Ismael doesn't mind, that I submit my report in a written format and just have Pat maybe distribute it to you all so that you're not kept here for another 10, 15. It is a rather long report that I have this month, so I would prefer to do that and have you read it maybe with a fresh mind and send me your questions, or if you have any follow-up discussion regarding the questions that I proposed regarding like faculty burnout and dual credit, then feel free to send me an email. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you to those of you who are still here. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So our next agenda item, item 9B, is University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees individual committee met on November 10th. And I'm just gonna throw in different kind of highlight just in the interest of time. And one of the highlights came from Academic Affairs, Student and Personnel Committee approval of university recommendation of Dr. George Middlemiss, who accepted university offer to be the Vice President for Administration and Finance, and also the CFO, Chief Financial Officer. So that was approved and effective January 16. Dr. Middlemiss is expected to join Northern. There were also recommendation for tenure and promotion, and that was also approved to the House. The college in question for this faculty would be Health and Human Science. There were a lot of reports concerning review of 10 academic programs and 4 university centers. And in addition to this, I'm just going to go on to one significant kind of highlight pertaining to the board review, review of annual performance of President Freeman. The trustees discussed President annual review process and unanimously expressed confidence and appreciation in President Freeman's leadership and goals for the university. The full report and minute of the Board of Trustees meeting can be found on the website, and you can also access it just by going through the informational items of your Faculty Senate agenda packet. If you have the electronic one, you could always use that to access the minute. So we will go now to agenda item 9C, Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee. It doesn't look like we have report. Good. Item 9D, Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee, my colleague David Valentine.
Hi, I'll try to make this quick. I have two things. One is that we have a request that if you would assess your faculty and ask them about what concerns they have related to DEI, and please send that information to us. And related to that, President Freeman also asked for information about what types of incentive structures could be put in place to move us forward in doing some of this work, the transdisciplinary work. So if you would please consult with your faculty and send that information to me. And the second thing is that I've been asked to announce that the Anti-Racism Collective Group is a group of faculty interested in anti-racism work, and they are going to be hosting an event in which Dr. Vernice Edgehill-Walden is going to come and through a Zoom session, going to be describing the plan for shared equity leadership moving forward, in particular the way in which we're going to be building something called a community of practice. I don't have a lot of information about it, so I'm looking forward, because it's going to be an opportunity to learn about how ADEI is going to be coordinating all of the different moving parts that are doing work on DEI throughout the whole institution. That session is going to be held Monday, November 28th from 3:30 to 5. I'm going to plan on passing that information and the Zoom link onto Pat Erickson, who I hope will then distribute it to all of you. And I hope that you will distribute that to your faculty, particularly those interested in learning more and participating in some of the coordinated DEI efforts across campus. Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. Our next agenda item is item 9E, Faculty Senate Rules, Governance, and Election Committee. Lori, okay, there's no report. Agenda item 9F, Student Government Association. Dallas? Okay, Dallas is not here. Item 9G, Operating Staff Council. If Holly is around, does she have a report? No report, okay. Item 9H, Supportive Professional Staff Council. Right, thank you. And I think that brings us to our last agenda item, informational. And our next Faculty Senate meeting would be next year, January 2024. And on this note, I want to take a moment and thank each and every one of you, faculty, staff, administration, and student representative for your support in advancing the work of shared governance, and more importantly, supporting the success of our student throughout the semester. One example is what we have seen now. Thanksgiving is a week away, and not long after that, the holiday season is going to be upon us. So happy Thanksgiving and wishing everyone a wonderful holiday season. And do not forget to take care of yourself, self-care, and stay warm and blessed. With that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn today's meeting. David? Second. Okay, we have Todd. All in favor? Aye. Okay, meeting adjourned. Thank you.